Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, May 1st, 2018. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Thanks for tuning in. On today's show, we'll get an update on our public libraries. Meet a retired New York City firefighter who was buried twice on 9/11. And meet Willy Wonka, Charlie Bucket, and all the Thunder Mountain High School Chocolate Factory characters. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note, music, and more right here, live and local, on a Juno afternoon. Currently 45 degrees here in the capital city with a light rain.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Supreme Court recently heard oral arguments on the Colvert case, which has pitted the state of Washington against tribes and the U.S. At issue is a federal court order that the state must replace culverts, which the tribes say impact salmon migration. Isaac Kestenbaum reports.
In the 1850s, tribes of what's now Washington State ceded millions of acres through treaties, but retained the right of taking fish. Over 150 years later, on the side of the U.S. and tribes, attorney Alan Kadem told the Supreme Court that the treaty language meant more than just a share of whatever fish are available.
When the United States promised the tribes federal protection for their pre-existing right to take fish, that included more than just the hollow promise of access to fisheries that could be blocked off and emptied of their salmon.
In lower courts, Washington State had said the treaties wouldn't stop it from blocking streams. But in Supreme Court, State Solicitor General Noah Purcell called that argument a mistake. Now he said that the treaties protected against a large decline in fish. Justice Alito asked what exactly he meant by the word large. Here's what Purcell said in response.
I don't want to be picky about the word. The word is less important to us than the concept that it be meaningful.
Much of the questioning was about whether or not an actual number could apply to treaty fishing rights. On behalf of the tribes, attorney William Jay said the treaties protected against substantial degradation. Justice Alito again.
And I hate to keep asking the same question, but does substantial degradation mean a number? And if so, what is the number?
I don't think it means a hard and fast number. I think it is something that you would look at in context.
Neither side really gave a precise test for what would constitute a treaty violation. And this may be what the Supreme Court ends up deciding. A decision could be out by the end of June. For National Native News, I'm Isaac Kestenbaum.
An Indian mascot at a high school in a suburb of Chicago is being retired. The Chicago Tribune reports Maine West High School officials announced Monday the school will end its decades-long tradition of having a student dressed in an American Indian-themed costume perform at games and school events. Administrators say the decision came after objections by the American Indian community, including recent backlash on social media. The school will still be called the Warriors. A committee will be formed to look at how to represent the school. Tribes and Native organizations across the country are among leaders working to end Indian mascots in schools and professional sports. They say Indian mascots and logos promote stereotypes and are harmful to Native youth. Members of the Colorado Indian tribes in Arizona voted over the weekend to recall Chairman Dennis Patch. The special election was in response to water. Some tribal members began the recall effort, accusing the tribal government of acting without consent of members to lease some of their water rights. In a statement to tribal members, Patch said there was growing misinformation spread about the tribes and points to an update for community members last fall discussing water management, including leasing, as a means towards economic development. The Parker Pioneer reports unofficial results showed members narrowly voted to remove the chairman. The Navajo Nation is assisting people impacted by the Tender Fire in north central Arizona. The tribe's Twin Arrows Casino near Flagstaff is helping with evacuation efforts. A shelter is set up at the casino's event center. The Salvation Army and the Red Cross are coordinating with relief efforts. Tribal police and other Navajo departments are also assisting with efforts. Arizona's governor has declared a state of emergency. The fire has burned more than 9,000 acres. Native leaders in Canada are gathered for the next 2 days to examine federal legislation. The Assembly of First Nations is seeking input and ways to implement their political strategy. The agenda includes legislation on language, funding, and safe drinking water. Federal officials are among those expected to participate in the talks. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support from AmeriCorps Vista, whose members fight against poverty while earning money for college and gaining skills, with rewarding service opportunities around the country and info at AmeriCorps.gov/Vista. Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for more than 30 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 1st, 2018. Scott Burton, your host today. And our first guest is Andy Hirsch from the Juno Public Libraries. She's the Electronic Services and Community Outreach Librarian. Andy, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much.
Nice to have you here. So we do this about once a month. Let's check in with the library. What's going on?
Yeah, so we are really excited. May is the month that we spend gearing up for the summer reading program. And so the theme this year is Libraries Rock, which I think is pretty cool. So what that means functionally is that for the next 2 or 3 weeks, we actually don't have story time. Story time will be coming back on May 25th because all of our youth services librarians are out touring the schools. They go to all of the different elementary and middle schools in Juneau, and they talk about summer reading and books, and they put on plays, and it's super, super fun. But what that means is that they're not at the library to do story time. But we'll be back with story times plus a craft on May 25th, and we'll do that all summer.
Remind us what story time's like. What are the ages and what are the crafts that you do with them?
Great question. So we have two different types of story times. Mondays at 10 a.m. the downtown library and 11 a.m. in the valley, we have what we call toddler time. And this is aimed primarily at kids ages birth to two, but any child and adult are welcome. And we read stories and sing songs, and we do a lot of wiggling. It's really fun. And then on Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays at 11 a.m., and that's one day at each branch, we do story times. And these are primarily aimed at kids aged 2 to 5, but younger and older kids are welcome to come. The difference is the stories are a little more complex. There's a little less wiggling. And then in the summertime, we follow that up every week with a different hands-on craft or exciting activity for kids to do. And so they're going to be a lot of fun.
All right. Thinking about the summer, do you get school kids coming in to hang out?
We get so many kids. It is so great. And I'm just going to put this out there. Reading over the summer is important for everybody. It's important for kids, also for adults. But one of the things that the reason it's so important for kids to continue reading over the summer is that so that they maintain their grade level readiness for going back to school in September. So we at the library, we encourage reading in whatever form it might take. And so maybe your kid loves chapter books. Maybe they're not a chapter book person, and that's fine. We have really complex and involved picture books. We have comic books, which are really great for kids to read because it pairs words with pictures. And so and the themes can be really complex and can cover biographies. There's a lot of nonfiction comic books that are out there right now, which are really informative.
Thinking about the summer, I'm not going to put you on the spot now, but we should let our listeners know what the librarian's summer picks are, summer reading picks.
Oh, we absolutely should.
Right? So maybe put one together and then come back in a
Next
couple weeks.
Next month, I will have a list for you.
Great, because I think a lot of our listeners do love those recommendations here coming up in summertime.
And we always have a section called staff picks at all of our branches, so you can go and ask, and we love getting that question, just so you know. It's my favorite question to get
really?
When I'm on the desk.
Oh, cool. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. What else is going on?
Well, we actually have a couple job openings. So if you want to give people library book recommendations or help out in any way, we actually have an assistant library technician position available, and it's our relief position. So what that means is it's a position that works at all three of the Juneau Public Library branches, and it works on the service desk. So it's helping people check stuff in and out. It's answering questions, helping people with the computers, and just being there. And this is a position, it works kind of irregular hours, mostly it fills in when people go on vacation or if somebody calls in sick. We keep the libraries open even if the entire library staff gets the flu. So this is the position that really helps us do it, and it's a lot of fun.
People person for sure. Probably wants a vehicle or be really good at taking the bus, right?
Vehicle for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. That's one. Another opening?
And then there's actually an opening at the City Museum. It's a full-time job. It's the curator of collections and exhibits. And so this is the position that researches and recommends acquiring artworks and historical objects, works on building the exhibits, making sure that the environmental conditions are okay, that things don't that things aren't too humid or too dry, and that things can stay in the museum in a pristine quality. So it's a very cool position, and both of these positions can be found on the Juneau City website, which is www.juneau.org, under the jobs section. So please apply.
How would you describe the environment working for the Juneau Public Libraries?
It's amazing. What I like to say is that the people who want to work in a library are just really cool people. And so it's, I always call it a self-selecting population of awesome, because I'm a dork like that. And so I love working with my coworkers, and I enjoy going to work every day. And so I hope you do too by working for us.
Sounds good. You were telling me before we went on the air about Alaska Mail Services.
Yeah, so one of the things I wanted to kind of talk with you about is a couple of programs that we do at the library that people probably don't know about. And one of them is called Alaska Mail Services. And this is actually a grant-funded program through the state of Alaska. And what we do is we have staff at the Juneau Public Library that provide library services to villages throughout Alaska that are too small to have a library. So in the southeast area, that's Hoona, Elfin Cove, Yakutat, and it's all over, not just in southeast. And so when I say services, I mean everything that the library provides in person, we provide by mail. So that means we send shipments of books and movies. If you are working on a research project and you need articles, we'll help you find articles. If you want access to digital things, downloadable stuff, or tutorials online, you get access to all of that. Large print books, children's books.
Will the library actually pay for shipping to get these materials out to the community?
Yes, and it's entirely grant funded from the state, and so it's an entirely free program, and we pay for shipping out and shipping back. And so anybody who lives in a community that is too small to have a library, let us know.
What is the best way for an individual from one of those communities to contact you about this Alaska Mail Services?
If they have internet access, going to our website, www.juneau.org/library, we have a section on there called Mail Services, and on there there's an application that you can fill out. And one of the cool things about the application is you could pick out the books that you want, or you could say, you know, I really like mysteries. Can I get mysteries, but ones where that's not violent? And we will pick out mysteries that aren't very violent and send them to you. Or westerns, or, you know, you're like, I want cookbooks. And so we will pick those out for you and send them to you. And if you live in a community that, or you don't have solid internet service, you can always give us a call. And the number for Mail Services is 907-586-586. 5379. Or you can just call the main line, whichever is easiest for you to remember. And that one's 586-5249. And we'll get you to the right spot.
Very cool. Pop-up libraries.
Oh, my favorite.
When's your next one?
Oh, the next one is actually going to be Thursday at 2 o'clock at the Pioneer Home. So one of the other programs we do, and I work on this one, and so I'm inordinately fond of it, is we provide pop-up libraries at senior locations throughout Juneau. And so we go to the Juneau Senior Center, we go to the Pioneer Home, and we go to Wildflower Court. And I was wrong, we're going to Wildflower Court at 2 o'clock on Thursday. And so what we do, we don't have a bookmobile, right? Lots of communities have bookmobiles, but we don't.
Do we need one?
Well, we have my Honda Civic, and I have some suitcases with wheels. And so what we do is we pack up these suitcases with books and magazines and audiobooks, books on tape, movies, music CDs, all the things that you can get at the library. We pack them up into these suitcases, and we take them on the road with us. And so we go to the Juneau Senior Center every other Tuesday around lunchtime, 11:30 to 12:30. We go to Wildflower Court, and we go to the Pioneer Home. And I think I'm just so excited about this service, because seniors face a lot of additional barriers that can make it really hard to get to the library. But that doesn't mean that you shouldn't have access to be able to ask questions and read books and be educated and entertained. Like, we don't stop learning at any point in our life, even though we might not have the ability to get to the library. So I love going and talking with people and answering their questions and bringing them books and being like, oh, you wanted this one last week. I brought it for you. So anyway.
Sounds like a lot of fun, a lot going on at the library.
Yeah.
Pop-up libraries, Alaska Mail Services, getting materials out to communities and employment opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
Story times.
Yeah, although no story times till May 25th.
That's right. Good reminder. Mm-hmm. Andy Hirsch, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you
we
so
look
much.
Forward to our recommended summer reading list.
I will bring one next time.
We're looking forward to it. Remind us where to get all this information online.
So you can find all of this information from our website, which is www.juneau.org/library. We also have a Facebook page where we post upcoming events and things that we think are really interesting. And that can be found at facebook.com/library events.
Andy Hirsch, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I was in the library. Heard your name in my ear, my friend's lame ghosts. When I went outside, the sky was turning black. Saw you. We'll be right back.
It's Jazz and Classics' signature event, Putting on the Ritz, Saturday, May 12th, when the UAS Egan Library is turned into an intimate cabaret. For Jazz Meets Classics, Songs of Love, with tenor Bradley Howard and jazz singer Janae Kendrick, with Gary Motley and William Ransom on piano. A delightful blend of classical and jazz. We're putting on the Ritz. Don't miss it. Saturday, May 12th at 6:30. Tickets at Hearthside, The Jack, and jazzandclassics.org.
KTOO is supported by listeners like you and by Breezen, offering a large selection of wine, beer, and spirits at three Juneau locations. The Growler Station at the Lemon Creek Breezen carries rotating draft beers from Alaska and the U.S. Information at breezen.com.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon on Tuesday, May 1st, 2018. Scott Burton, your host today. And joining me now in the studio as part of the Glacier Valley Rotary Pillars of America speaker series, Mr. Joe Tarillo. He's a 25-year lieutenant, now retired with the New York City Fire Department, now a Goodwill ambassador and inspirational speaker. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thanks for the opportunity, Scott.
It's nice to have you here.
Great.
And also Mandy Massey of Glacier Valley Rotary, the media communications chair. Welcome to the show. Mandy, nice to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Okay, so this is our third and final speaker of this season. Is that right?
That is correct. I can't believe it. And he is going to end it with a wonderful finale. What you hear today is only a small piece of what you're in store for. If you go ahead and go out, get those tickets at Hearthside Books, there's still time. It includes lunch, so you spend your about 2 hours of middle of your day with us. And it's open to everybody, ages approximately 10 years old and up. So.
Okay, so this is tomorrow, Wednesday, doors at 11:15. That's a good time to get there.
That is. It is. It's a good time. They find you a seat, and you're served your salad first and your lunch, your dessert, and then the speaker comes on. We get to hear from Joe.
Okay, at Centennial Hall tomorrow, Wednesday. Mr. Tarillo, a big career in the New York City Fire Department. A lot of stuff happened, though, on 9/11. Would you mind sharing some of that story with us?
No, I mean, tomorrow I'll be sharing it, you know, a moment by moment in great detail. We don't have the time to do that today, and I apologize for that. But in any event, you know, if I have to give you what we call the nickel version, that's how we say things back in Brooklyn, New York. I was actually on my way to a press conference that morning that I had chose the date to introduce a new rescue hero, an action figure made by Fisher-Price Toys, which was in addition to other rescue heroes they already had, namely Jake Justice, who was a police officer, and Perry Medic, an ambulance attendant, and Jack Hammer, construction worker, Sandy Beach, a lifeguard, Wendy Waters, a female firefighter. And they wanted a New York City firefighter to be their new rescue hero, and I helped them design it in January of 2001. And it took about 6 months to go from artwork to the first mold and prototype, which was now July of 2001. And they called us up for another meeting, and we looked over the mold and the prototype. And there were certain things that we thought that they should change a little bit. They wanted our input. And one of the things that they did on the advice of one of their executives was to draw a big mustache on Billy Blaze, because I had a big mustache. And they thought that he needed to look more like me, more of a signature New York City firefighter. In any event, it took about 3 weeks, you know, to remold him with the big mustache. And now it's the end of July of 2001. We looked it over once again, and we agreed in going to mass production. And Fisher-Price Toys wanted to have a big press conference in New York City. They wanted to know, where can we have a press conference? And I was coming upon the opening of my new learning center, which I had opened 1 year before for kids in terms of fire prevention and survival. And I thought that would be a great place to do it as a natural tie. And they loved the idea. So they loved the venue of the press conference, but they wanted to know when. They said, we know where. We'll do the press conference at the Learning Center, but when? I said, well, let's do it in October because it's fire prevention month. And they said, well, it's very apropos to the project, but it's too close to Christmas and the holiday season. We want to get Billy Blaze on the mark a little bit sooner. Well, October was too distant. This is the end of July. And I was brainstorming. And I said, you know, 911 is the emergency phone number in New York City. why don't we, for the first time ever, have a 911-themed safety day in New York City and introduce the new children's rescue hero, a likeness of a New York City firefighter called Billy Blazes. So the date was set September 11, 2001, 9 o'clock in the morning. Every TV station, every newspaper reporter, the mayor, the fire commissioner was waiting for me at Rockefeller Center in the heart of Manhattan to introduce a new children's rescue hero, Billy Blaze, a New York City firefighter, when the first plane struck the North Tower as I was on my way to the press conference. And I was in full view of the upper part of the tower with about 10 floors of fire wrapped all around the building. And now I had to make a big decision. What do I do? If I go to the right, I go to the press conference. If I make a left, I get to my old firehouse where I started my career across the street from the South Tower. And that's the decision I made, because I knew Billy Blazes wasn't going to happen, that this day was going to be a day that nobody would ever forget. And I got to my old firehouse at 9 o'clock in the morning. I took off my dress uniform, the one I'm wearing right now, and I borrowed a set of firefighting clothing from another fireman who was off duty, who happened to be a friend, Tommy McNamara. And I ran out of the firehouse, and as I was running to the North Tower, I had to pass the South Tower to get to the North Tower. And it was now exactly 9:03 as I was running past the South Tower, and the second jet came right over my head, and I was the only one underneath it. And I realized at that point, A, that we were under a terrorist attack. B, I said everybody on the top of both buildings are going to die. We're not going to get to them, and they're not going to get down. And C, I said these towers are going to collapse, but nobody will listen or believe me. And eventually, within that 55-minute period after being struck, the South Tower started coming down as I was outside right underneath it, and I started running, but I didn't make it.
For many of us, that's maybe the most horrifying image we've ever seen. And you were actually there. What was going through your head as you made that choice to run towards the buildings rather than get away for safety?
You know, Scott, that's a great question. I didn't have to be there that day. I chose to be there, and I wasn't operating under the direction of anybody. I was kind of like a lone wolf in a firefighter's uniform. And when I think back about that incident, we all were trying to do whatever we could possibly do as best as we can do it, as fast as we can, because we had to evacuate as many people as we could from the towers and the surrounding buildings. And in less than an hour, the second building was already collapsing. So it seemed like we had forever to implement some kind of emergency procedures. Anything we were doing was a futile effort. And I look back and I try to critique that day in every different angle, from every different perspective, but we couldn't have done anything different or anything better. It was, you know, it was tragedy just waiting to happen, and much sooner than what I thought. I didn't think the buildings were going to collapse until about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so I thought we had about 5 or 6 hours to get everybody out of the building and the surrounding buildings, but in less than an hour, in exactly 55 minutes as I was outside, the building started coming down. And all I kept on saying to myself, you idiot, you're the one who knew his building was going to collapse, and you put yourself right underneath it. And I just started running, hoping to make it underneath the footbridge, thinking that they would find my body. I wanted a funeral, you know, more than anything in the world. That's all I ever wanted, a funeral. I mean, how weird is that? But I didn't make it to the footbridge. A piece of steel hit me in the back of the head, split my head wide open. Huge slabs of concrete just hitting my body. With every slab, more and more bones are breaking. And now I'm buried underneath the building with all these other people in the darkness. We couldn't see each other. We were suffocating. There was no more air. And all those screams had turned into cries, cries into whimpers, whimpers into silence. One by one, all those people had died with me, and I was still alive. They found the void, and they crawled in. They got me out, and they found three other firefighters. And they put me on a deck of a boat on the Hudson River with the anticipation of getting me to a hospital on a boat. Imagine going to a hospital on a boat. I mean, are you... When you're on a boat, you're going on a cruise. I'm on a boat and I'm going to a hospital. Don't make sense, right? And then the second tower collapsed on top of the boat. I got buried in the engine room a second time, and I'm suffocating all over again. Eventually, they find me about an hour later in the engine room. The boat skips across the river to another state, New Jersey, and I wake up in an operating room, but I don't know where I am. And they're cutting my clothes off of me in the operating room. And on the inside of our coats, all firefighters write their name. It's a Tommy McNamara. So I was admitted as Tommy McNamara for 3 days, and for 3 days they didn't know where I was. I was declared dead and missing.
Wow. Wow.
And so that night, you know, when 344 firefighters were declared dead, 3 days later one would be found alive, and then everybody realized that Superman is not real, Batman and Robin's not real, Spider-Man's not real, The only children's rescue here who ever came to life was Billy Blazes on the morning of September 11, 2001. And that's how the whole day really started. Just a very ironic story.
Wow. You've had 17 years to process that day and that horrific experience. What are some of the takeaways? What are some of the things that you're going to share tomorrow with your listeners about that day and what you learned from it?
Well, thanks, Scott. Thanks for leading me into this. I'm going to start off with a segment called From Devastation to Inspiration. I'm going to retell the story as I just told it now, but in a lot more detail. And then I kind of want to segue into some very, very strong speaking points, mainly geared more towards the kids that are going to be there, because I feel so strongly about young kids because it's a difficult part of their life and they're very confused because they're going through psychological, physical, mental changes and they don't know where life is taking them. So I want to share some things about my life at their age and things that I learned as I navigated those tough times about personal responsibility, overcoming obstacles, prejudice and stereotyping, how we need to get along with each other and to not let differences create another September 11, 2001.
And when we were talking before the show, it sounds like your journey to becoming a firefighter was not easy. Your childhood was not easy.
No, you know what, Scott, to be honest with you, my real passion and my love in life is the construction industry. I'm a carpenter, plumber, electrician by trade. Ever since I was a little kid, I didn't really gravitate to sports like a lot of other kids. I mean, I played sports, but I wasn't like this jock, so to speak, or the quintessential athlete. I wanted to create and build things. That's what I loved doing. And, you know, when other kids were buying baseball gloves, I was buying a circular saw. And so, you know, when I graduated high school, I decided to go into an engineering curriculum only because I wanted to know more about the construction process. And I graduated engineering school, and the test came out for the fire department. And all the kids in the neighborhood where I came from in Brooklyn, they all wanted to be a cop or a fireman. They had an extra application. Hey, Joe, take the firefighter's test with us. After that, we'll go out and we'll have a couple of beers. I said, I'm in. Anyway, 70,000 young kids took the test. Only 3,000 passed. I was in the top 1,000, and all my friends failed the test. And I took the fire department job just to get them angry. I was going to get sworn in and quit the next day. So I could tell them forever I was a New York City fireman. But you know why? It was the best decision I ever made. And ironically, having studied the Twin Towers in engineering school, after graduating the fire academy, after going through the training, of all 357 firehouses, they could arbitrarily place me to start my career. They placed me in the firehouse across the street from the Twin Towers. Now I'm back as a fireman protecting them and no longer an engineering student studying them. And I think, you know what? I think it was meant to be, because that's what drew me back to that location on the morning of September 11th, because that was my original firehouse. And you know, as they say, it's all history from here.
Before we got going, you pointed out there's a difference between an inspirational speaker and a motivational speaker. You're an inspirational speaker. What differentiates that?
You know, Scott, I think anybody that is what we call a keynote speaker gets painted with a broad brush. You know, it's kind of generic. He's a motivational speaker, right? I mean, that's okay, but I don't really see it that way. You know, I would like to think that I'm an inspirational speaker. And what I really endeavor to do through my story, through the messages that I impart, I would like to think that I can inspire people so that tomorrow morning when they wake up, they could begin on a new journey because they'll motivate themselves only because maybe I inspired them. I don't think anybody motivates anybody except yourself, but it takes that spark from an inspirational speaker, somebody who you really believe in, having heard them, having spoken to them. So I think that's very important. I know for me, I want to help young kids that are struggling through whatever issues they might be having, because it's such a difficult time for them and they don't really fully understand. There's too much anxiety and fear about who you're going to be. Am I going to measure up? Will I be a success? Will I be a failure? And it's a normal human emotion, but they don't think it's normal. It's a very normal human emotion, but they don't see it that way because they're scared. They're frightened. They don't know how to talk about it. And unfortunately, some kids don't survive it, and I want kids to know that, you know, certain things are not options. You know, don't do something that's going to be a long-term solution to a short-term problem, because I went through it as a kid, and I went through it very bad, and I want to share my story with them.
You've been listening to the voice of Joe Tarillo. He's a retired 25-year lieutenant with the New York City Fire Department. He's speaking tomorrow, Wednesday, at Centennial Hall as part of the Glacier Valley Rotary Pillars of America Speaker Series. Mandy Massey, also in the studio. Mandy, can you give us the details again on tomorrow?
Of course. Go out to Hearthside Books today, either downtown or in the valley, and pick up a ticket for yourself, your coworkers, your friends, family. If you have kids ages 10 and up, bring them. Remember, if they are 10 to 20 years old, they don't remember this event. And what better way to expose them to this historic event and help them never forget than to bring them to watch and hear Joe tomorrow. So we welcome you. Be there early and go to Hearthside today and get those tickets before they sell out.
Thank you, Mandy. And Joe Terrell, thank you, sir, for coming to our community and sharing your message with us.
Great, Scott. Thanks for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
We'll see you tomorrow.
Great.
Centennial Hall, Juno Jazz and Classics at Centennial Hall tomorrow. No, excuse me, Friday night at 7:30 p.m. Check them out. But now in the studio is Alan Truitt, and he is the BAM and also the Youth Employment Parks Program Coordinator for the Zach Gordon Youth Center. And we're here to talk about employment opportunities for 16 to 20-year-olds this summer. Alan, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott.
Nice to have you here. So the Youth Employment Parks Program, when did it get going?
So Youth Employment Parks started about 3 summers ago.
Uh-huh.
It's a partnership between the CBJ Parks, Zach Gordon Youth Center, and SAIL.
Okay. I've seen you on the Flume Trail working. Where else has this group worked?
Oh, all over town. We've done work at, of course, the Flume. Done work in Granite Creek Basin or in Savco Park or Sandy Beach. We resurfaced the Rainforest Trail last summer and built a new little trail in Cope Park last year, too.
Okay. And so, and you usually have a crew of 10?
Yeah, about 10 teens.
16 to 20-year-olds?
Yes, sir.
They can make, 10-50 an hour?
10-50 an hour for 30 hours a week.
And what time does it start in the morning? And
they work 9 to 4:30, so that means they get their nights and their weekends free.
That's not a bad gig for a teenager.
Not a bad gig.
And you're outside?
Yeah, they work outside every day with other teens cooperatively, you know, doing landscaping or trail projects throughout the city.
You know, I'm looking out in the studio out there. We have the whole crew of Willy Wonka from the Thunder Mountain High School acting department. I wonder if any of them are interested in one of these jobs. What are you like as a boss, Alan?
You know, I we try to focus on teaching some of those very most central job skills, the showing up, having a positive attitude, and communicating. Like, people who, every day, if you come and you show up and you have a good attitude and you communicate when you can't or what issues you have, that's a successful teen. That's a teen who will go on to have a good job. And, you know, we know for a first job that sometimes people don't have those skills, so we work with teens to help them develop those type of skills.
Okay. If somebody wants to do this or they're listening and they think it'd be good for their kid to do, how do they get in touch with you and what's that timeline look like?
So they can either get applications from SAIL or from at the Zach Gordon Youth Center.
And SAIL is Southeast Alaska Independent Living?
Yep, SAIL, Southeast Alaska Independent Living, or the Zach Gordon Youth Center right here downtown. They can also submit applications to either of those places. And if they need help filling them out, because sometimes in your first time filling out a job application can be a little bit of a challenge, just let us know. You know, ask anyone at the Zach or at SAIL, and they'll be glad to help you.
Okay, and when are applications due?
As soon as possible. Our first round of interviews is this Friday. If you want to get in on that round of interviews, I recommend you get it into me tomorrow. But if you get it in later, we can try to get you an interview a little bit later. So if you successfully turn in an application before Friday this week, we will give you an interview for sure.
Okay. 10 spots, working outside with Alan, 10:50 an hour, 30 hours a week, 9 to 4:30. What's the first day of work? What's the date? I gotcha. It's okay. I bet it's on your website or something.
It is. It's on the application. It's about mid-June.
Okay.
So they have it's 2 weeks after school ends. So they get 2 weeks when school ends. They can do whatever they want. And then 9 weeks of work in the summer.
Okay.
And what's great is on Fridays are a half day, and who doesn't like getting early on a Friday? But Fridays are education days, so we do things. We focus on developing job skills through resume building, through interview skills, through career exploration to help get to that next level so you can get that next job and be successful.
Okay, interviews start this Friday. Get your applications ASAP from SAIL, Southeast Alaska Independent Living, or down at the Zach Gordon Youth Center. Can you find them online, or do you just need to go down and get a paper copy?
You can. I think you have to go get a paper copy. A lot of the school counselors also have copies.
Okay. And get those to Alan Truitt, who we're speaking to right now. If somebody wants more information, Alan, where can they get it?
They can give me a call at 796-5811.
All right, 796-5811. Alan Truitt, employment opportunities for 16 to 20-year-olds working outside. Sounds like a lot of fun. Alan, is there anything we're missing, anything you'd like to add?
No, that's our I think we've got it all. But, yeah, we're looking forward to having some teens working in our city parks, benefiting their communities, and having some fun this summer.
Any idea where your first project might be?
I'm not sure yet.
Still working on it.
Thursday, I got a meeting about that.
Sounds good. Alan, it's been great speaking with you.
All right. Thank you, Scott.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the chocolate room. Hold your breath. Make a wish. Count to three. Come with me, and you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look, and you'll see into your imagination. We'll begin with a spin, traveling
in the world of my creation. What we'll see will defy explanation. If you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it, want to change the world, there's nothing to it. No life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be. Simply look around and view it. Anything you want to do it. Want to change the world. There's nothing to it. There is no life I know to compare with pure imagination. Living there, you'll be free if you truly wish to be.
Our driveway sloped down, the road sloped up, and on the far side.
Please attend this year's Empty Bowls event on Sunday, May 6, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Centennial Hall. Empty Bowls is the annual fundraiser for Juno's Emergency Center, Soup Kitchen, and Care Center. Gather with friends and neighbors to enjoy soup from Juno restaurants, artisan bread rolls, fresh baked cookies, and take home a beautiful handcrafted bowl. Check out the silent auction, live music, and learn more about the Glory Holes programs. Tickets available online at feedjuno.org and at Hearthside Books. This message brought to you by the Glory Hole. Cruise for a cause on Wednesday, May 2nd, and set sail to Orca Point Lodge with the United Way of Southeast Alaska. With guest of honor, Brian Weed, Alaskan explorer and lead of Juno's Hidden History Group, who will be sharing the local legend, the Lost Rocker Mine, while guests enjoy a delicious meal provided by Allen Marine. The cruise departs promptly at 5:30 p.m. from Stouter Harbor and Off Bay aboard Allen Marine. Join the United Way for this relaxing, enjoyable event. Proceeds benefit the United Way of Southeast Alaska. Tickets are available at unitedwayseak.org.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, May 1st, 2018. Scott Burton, your host, about 10 minutes until the top of the hour. I have a big part of the crew for Willy Wonka, who's, and the Chocolate Factory, who's playing out at the Thunder Mountain High School. They opened last weekend and they're going through this weekend. Everyone, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It is so nice to have you here. Brian Van Kirk, you teach music out at Thunder Mountain High School. How did this come to be?
Yes. Well, we were looking for different musicals to be able to perform in the spring, and we had our last year's drama teacher depart, and she went down to Seattle, and so we kind of were looking at a couple of different plays, and I suggested Willy Wonka, and it just kind of rolled with it. Once everyone heard about it, everyone got on board, and one thing led to another.
All right. Caitlin, it seems like we should start with Charlie Bucket, right?
Okay.
Tell us about Charlie and what happens to Charlie in this play.
So Charlie Bucket, he is born into a poor family. They live in a bucket shack, and he wants more than anything to have the golden ticket, and he has no chances of getting the ticket a few times, and then one time he finds a dollar coin in the snow, and he gets the chocolate bar, and there's the golden ticket. And then he goes on this tour with his Grandpa Joe, and all this fun stuff happens at the chocolate factory, and he ends up having the chocolate factory at the end.
All right. Alex, you play Willy Wonka, right? Or Wonka or the Candyman?
Yep.
And Charlie comes to see you, right, essentially, and what happens?
So kind of throughout the play, I'm telling the story of how all of this came to be. And so I think throughout the play, I kind of am watching over Charlie and making sure that he's the one that I want. And in the end, I give him the golden ticket. He comes on the tour, and there's the four other kids on the tour with us. And over time, as we make our way through the tour, the children are all whittled down to just Charlie and his grandpa left. And at the end, I let him go, and then he comes back and admits that he did something wrong while he was in the tour, and this is to Willy Wonka a great show of honesty, and so as a reward, I end up giving Charlie the chocolate factory.
Okay. Jessica, you play Mrs. Bucket. Tell us about what you're doing in this play.
So I play Mrs. Bucket, and I'm mainly in the first act. A lot of our scenes are just in our house, and it shows the struggle that the Bucket family is going through. 'Cause all we have to eat is cabbage soup. The first chocolate bar that Charlie gets is actually his birthday present, and that's all we were able to get him. And he was just so incredibly thankful for that one bar of chocolate. So that really shows how much so little means to him. And the family's all very close. We only have one room, so the scenes are very humorous to just get to see where Charlie gets his honesty and his happiness from. So.
All right. Ruel de la Cruz, you play Mike TV. Did I get your name right, by the way?
Yes.
Okay, excellent. Tell us about the character Mike.
Mike TV is one of the spoiled childs in the play, and he is the fourth golden ticket winner at that time. There's a scene where it shows him a lot. As his name, Mike TV, he's in love with TV, the internet, video games, and stuff like that. And he's one of the people who got trapped into the Willy Wonka tour, and it was, why am I forgetting things? And there's a TV, Wonka television, and I appear into the TV as my voice turns into a high-pitched voice, like a midget's voice.
Okay. All right. Caitlin, so Roald Dahl wrote the original book, right?
Yes.
Okay. Thinking about that book and this whole story, why do you think he wrote it? What was he trying to communicate to all of us?
I think he was trying to communicate, a lesson to children to not be spoiled, not be bratty, be kind and...
To not be like Mike.
Yes. To have, good qualities and be honest and care about things.
All right. What do you think, Alex?
I think, that's pretty much it. In one of the last songs, it kind of goes over the main thing of it. It's the fifth Oompa Loompa song, and one of the lines in it is, there's a problem with lots of our youth, not everybody likes telling the truth. So I think more than anything else, Roald Dahl was trying to communicate to the youth that the most important virtue to have is honesty. And if you are virtuous and are honest, then good things will come to you.
Jessica, as you've practiced this play and gone through it and rehearsed, have you gleaned anything from the writing, or what's been impressed you most about the whole thing?
Well, this is only my second show, like theater show, that I've ever done. So it's been really cool getting to be a part of, like, more than just the ensemble, and getting to see, like, what goes into each rehearsal. And we got to work with a new director, and, like, the storyline of this is just so, like, beautiful and fun, and everything's just, like, bright and colorful. So I definitely, we got to, like, play around. It was a lot of just, like, messing with different things and trying to figure out what worked for the story and what didn't work. So,
Brian Van Kirk, what's impressed you most about their performances?
Just the overall commitment to what they bring every day to the stage, as well as to rehearsal. It's a huge undertaking to put on a production of this size, and we have strived to do the best that we can in bringing that energy every single day. We started this show, I want to say we started rehearsing January 8th, and it's a long haul. It's a lot of hours. It's a lot of evenings. These guys have given up so much of their time, not to mention the regular schoolwork that we try to get to. But once Tech Week hits, it gets really hard. And you know, you'll see every down moment that they have. They'll be studying some of their for a quiz that's coming up, or they'll be trying to keep up on their studies as well as you know, bring that energy to the stage when they step out in front of everyone in the lights.
What comes first, everyone, grades or the show?
The show.
It's got to be the show.
Yeah, when it comes down to it, the show.
I'm counting some 24 cast members. That sound about right?
Sure.
Yeah, that sounds...
Wow, so you're right. That is a big show. Mm-hmm. Who can give our listeners the details of this weekend's performances?
So this weekend we have one show at Friday night at 7:30, and then on Saturday we have two shows, one at 2 o'clock and one again at 7:30.
And these are all at Thunder Mountain High School?
Yes, all in the Thunder Mountain Auditorium.
Okay, if somebody wants tickets to either the Friday night show, the Saturday matinee, or the Saturday night show, where can they get those?
I believe they can get them at Hearthside and at the door. Tickets are $15 for children and seniors, $20 for adults, and infants are free.
Okay. Thinking of the production, about how long is it?
I want to say it's around 2 hours.
Okay. Lots of singing?
Lots of singing.
All right. We've been speaking with Brian Van Kirk. That was Alex, Ruel, Caitlin, Jessica. Thank you all so much for coming on the show. We'll see you all tomorrow, Friday night at 7:30 for the second weekend, or you can see them Saturday, May 5th, 2 o'clock or 7:30. Anything we're missing? Anything you'd like to add?
It's been an absolute honor working with all of these students in doing this. It is a kid-friendly show. It is something that, like we talked about before, it teaches those life lessons. One of the things I really like about it, all of the Oompa Loompa songs in the second half all touch base on those exact things, those character flaws of the first four. And come check it out. It's great for all ages.
Willy Wonka out at Thunder Mountain High School. Thanks, everyone, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon.